Rosemary went to Cullum's opening night and reported it had been very successful. A lot of the customers had been neighbours. It boded well for the future. "This really is a great area. You two were very lucky to come in here when you did," Rosemary said approvingly. Rhea wished that she didn't sound so surprised, as if she hadn't expected it of them.
"Not lucky, just far-seeing," said Danny, who must have felt the same.
"Not a bit of it. The secret of the universe is timing. You know that," Rosemary laughed. She wasn't letting them get away with anything except random good fortune. "Isn't it a pity there aren't any proper apartments or little mews flats round here? I could become your neighbour."
"You could afford a whole house on the road the way you're going," Danny said.
"I don't need a whole house. I don't want to be worrying about tenants. What I need is a house just like the one your mother has, Rhea. A little mews one like that."
"Oh, that's a one-off," Danny explained. "Holly was certainly in the right place at the right time. You see, she looked after the old trout who lived in the big house, and then when she went to her reward, the family sold Holly the little mews. It's so valuable now, you wouldn't believe it."
"Would she like to sell and move in with you?" Rosemary wondered. "No way," Rhea said. "She loves her independence."
"And we want ours, too," Danny added. "Much as I love Holly, and I do love her, I wouldn't want her here all the time."
"Well, if there are no more of those around, perhaps something like a penthouse, for want of a better word. Something with a nice view."
"Not too many of those in a Victorian road."
"But there are a lot of conversions happening." Rosemary knew the property scene as well as anyone.
"Indeed there are. Expensive, but you'd always see your money back. Two bedroom?"
Danny was into sales mode now. "Yes, and a big room for entertaining. I could have a lot of functions there. A roof garden I'd like, if possible."
"Oh, there's nothing like that round here at the moment, but a lot of the upcoming sales are going to want to do huge renovations," Danny said.
"Keep an eye out for me, Danny. It doesn't have to be Tara Road. Somewhere nearby."
"I'll get it for you," Danny promised.
In 3 weeks, Danny came back with news of two properties. Neither owner was willing to build. It would be a question of Barney McCarthy buying the building, his men doing the renovation, and, subject to planning permission, getting a penthouse-style apartment custom-built for Rosemary. They could start drawing up plans as soon as she liked. Danny expected Rosemary to be very pleased, but she was cool. "We are talking about an outright buy, not just renting. And I could see the titles for all the other flats in the house."
"Oh, yes," Danny said.
"And my architect and surveyor could look at the plans?"
"Yes, of course."
"And inspect the building specifications and work throughout?"
"I don't see why not."
"What's the word on a roof garden?"
"If there's not too much heavy earth brought up, the structural engineers say both houses could take the load."
Rosemary smiled one of her all-embracing smiles. "Well, Danny, that's great. Lead me to the properties," she said. Rhea was shocked that Rosemary had been so ungracious about it all. "Imagine her interrogating you like that," she said, outraged, to Danny.
"I didn't mind," he said.
"But you're a friend. You went out on a limb for her, persuaded Barney to buy the place." Rhea was still stunned by the ingratitude.
"Nonsense, Rhea. Barney doesn't do things just for friendship. It's a business thing for him too, you know."
"But the way she said it, saying she'd have to inspect Barney's building methods and everything. I didn't know where to look when she said it." Danny laughed.
"Sweetheart, Barney has been known to cut corners with the best of them. Rosemary would know that. She's just thorough, covering everything. That's what has her where she is."
Hilary sniffed when she heard that Rosemary was coming to live in Tara Road. "That's the final seal of approval if she's coming to live in the area," she said. "Why don't you like her? She never says a word against you," Rhea complained. "Did I say a word against her?" Hilary asked innocently. "No, but it's the tone of voice. I think Rosemary's quite lonely, you know. It's all very well for you. You have Martin, and I have the children, and Danny too, when I see him. But she doesn't have anybody."
"Well, I'm sure she's had offers," Hilary said.
"Yes, I'm sure she has. And so had you and I, in a way, when we were young. But they were no use if they were for me, just like Ken Murray."
"Rosemary could get better than Ken Murray interested in her."
"Yes, but she hasn't found the right one. So isn't it grand that she's coming to live here halfway between Mam and ourselves? All we need is for you to come and live here too, then we'd have taken over."
"Where would Martin and I get the repayment on a house in Tara Road?" Hilary began.
Rhea moved off the subject. Gertie's mother's been difficult.
All mothers are difficult, Hilary said.
Ours isn't too bad.
That's because she babysits for you all the time, Hilary said.
No, very rarely. She's got far too busy a life. But Gertie's mother won't take the children any more. She says if she'd wanted a late family, she'd have had one.
What'll Gertie do?
Struggle, like she always has. I told her they could come here for a while, but... Rhea paused and bit her lip. But Danny wouldn't like it. He's afraid Jack Brennan will come round looking for them and for a fight, and that it would frighten Annie and Brian.
So, what happens now?
I go up and take them out for the day for her, but you see, it's the nights that are really the bad times. That's the time she wants them out of the house.
What a desperate mess, Hilary said,
her face soft in sympathy, and quite unlike the envious Hilary who normally talked about how much everybody earned. You'd never take them for this weekend, you and Martin, just till their grandmother comes round again, or that lunatic breaks his skull with drink and has to go to hospital again. I know Gertie'd die with gratitude.
All right, Hilary said surprisingly.
What kind of things do they eat? Beans and fish fingers, chips and ice cream, Rhea said.
We can manage that.
I'd love to have them myself, Rhea apologised. She did, in fact, sound wistful. Hilary forgave her.
I know you would. But it just happens that I'm married to a much more generous man than you are. That's the way things turn out.
Rhea paused to think of the spontaneous, loving Danny Lynch being considered less generous than the amazingly mean, penny-pinching Martin Moran. Wasn't it wonderful the way people saw their own situations?
So, Lady Ryan is going to grace us with her presence on the road, Nora Johnson said.
She'd come to introduce the new element in her life, a puppy of indeterminate breed. Even the children who loved animals were puzzled by it. Seemed to have too many legs, yet there were only four. Its head looked as if it was bigger than its body, but that couldn't possibly be so. It flopped unsteadily around the kitchen and then ran upstairs to relieve itself against the legs of the chairs in the front room. Annie reported this gleefully, and Brian thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever known. Rhea hid her irritation.
"Does it have a name, ma'am?" she asked. "Oh, it's just 32, no fancy name."
"You're going to call the dog 32?" Rhea was astounded.
"No, I mean where Lady Ryan's penthouse is being built. The dog is called Pliers, I told you that." She hadn't, but it didn't matter. "They all know she's coming to Tara Road. Everyone's heard of her."
"Oh, that's good. But anyway, they'd know her from visiting."
"No, they read about her in the newspapers. There's as much about her as there is about your friend Barney McCarthy."
Nora didn't approve of him either, so there was another sniff. "It's extraordinary, Rosemary being so famous," Rhea said. "You know, her mother still thinks of her as a 13-year-old and says she should be more like me. Rosemary, of all people."
Rosemary Ryan was featuring now in the financial pages as well as the women's pages. The company was going from strength to strength and had taken on several foreign contracts in recent months. They printed picture postcards for some of the major tourist resorts in the Mediterranean. They'd successfully tendered for sporting events as far afield as the west coast of America. She'd bought shares in the firm, and it was only a matter of time before she would take it over entirely. The man who'd employed her as a young girl to help in a very small print shop looked in amazement at the confident, poised woman who'd transformed his business. He was more interested in lowering his golf handicap nowadays than taking the early morning train to Belfast, having two meetings and a lunch, and coming back on the afternoon train with a signed contract for work worth more than he ever dreamed possible. Rosemary saw no reason at all why people in Northern Ireland shouldn't have their printing done in the South, if the service was professional, the price was right, and the quality high. She had long ago persuaded the company to change its name from Shamrock Printing to the more generally acceptable, if equally meaningless, Partners Printing. And still no man. Well, there were plenty of men, but no one man, or at least no one available man. She puzzled people, so attractive, flirtatious even. It wasn't that she was frigid. She quite enjoyed dalliances and encounters on the few occasions that she allowed them to develop. People thought she had a much more colourful and adventurous sex life than she had,
and Rosemary allowed this view to be widely held. For one thing, it discouraged people from thinking that she was lesbian, like her sister.
"Would that be so terrible if they thought you were?" Eileen had asked.
"No, and don't get all sensitive and prickly on me. Of course it wouldn't. It's just that if I'm not, then there's no point in having to carry all the defensive stuff that goes with it. You and Stephanie can do that because it's part of your life. It's not my cause."
"Fair enough," Eileen said. "But I don't see what you're so hot under the collar about. It's not the 1950s, for heaven's sake. You're free to do your own thing."
"Sure, it's people's expectations that annoy me."
"Maybe you've met him already and didn't know."
"What do you mean?"
"Maybe Mr. Perfect is out there under your nose and you just didn't recognize him. One night you'll fall into each other's arms."
Rosemary considered it. "It's possible," she said.
"So, who do you think it might be? There can't be anyone who rejected you, because nobody could, Ro. Maybe someone you never started with. Can you think of anyone?"
Rosemary had told nobody about Richard Roach, her date from the introductions agency, whom she had since met briefly at various gatherings. It had been so hurtful when he claimed to read in her face that she'd no interest in finding a life mate. "I did fancy Colin Barry a bit, you know, the one who has the restaurant. But I don't think he's the marrying kind."
"Gay?"
Eileen said. "No, just messy, complicated."
"I'd leave it, Ro, honestly. Stick to doing up this palace and building the business."
"I think I will," Rosemary agreed. When Gertie had another accident, her mother gave in and took the children back to live with her.
"You think I'm doing this for you, but I'm not. I'm doing it for those two defenseless children that you and that drunken sot managed to produce."
"You're not helping me, ma'am."
"I am helping. I'm taking two children out of a possible death house. If you were a normal woman instead of half-crazed yourself, you'd be able to realize what I'm doing is helping you."
"I have other friends, ma'am, who take them when Jack's upset."
"Jack is upset every day and every night of the week these days. And decent though that Morden pair are, the odd weekend is all they'll manage."
"Oh, you're very good, ma'am. It's just that you don't understand."
"You can say that again. Indeed, I don't understand. Two terrified little children who jump at the slightest sound. And you won't get a barn order and throw that lout out of their lives."
"You're the religious one. You believe in a vow, for better, for worse. We'd all stay when it's for better. It's when it's for worse that it's harder, you see."
"It's harder on a lot of people, all right."
Her mother's mouth was a thin, hard line as she packed John and Katie's things for yet another trip to their granny's in their disturbed young lives. Rosemary came round to Danny and Ria several evenings a week. There were always plans to be discussed, reports to be given. She never stayed long, just long enough for everyone to know she was on the case and that no shoddy workmanship would escape her sharp eye. Ria tried to give her supper, but she always said she'd eaten a gigantic lunch and couldn't possibly swallow another thing. Ria knew this wasn't true. Once a week, Rosemary went to Quentin's. The rest of the time she had a low-fat yogurt and an apple. Business meetings that had a social side to them would involve a wine and soda spritzer in the Shelbourne Hotel. Rosemary Ryan didn't remain greyhound slim without an effort of will. Sometimes Ria wondered why on earth she did it, why she pushed herself so hard. The gym and a swim before work, the jogging at the weekends, the permanent diet, the early nights, the regular hair appointments. What was it all for? Rosemary would say it was for personal satisfaction. But it seemed such an odd and even a lonely answer that Ria didn't ask any more. It was like the way they didn't talk about sex these days. Once they had talked of nothing else. And that was way back, before Ria had slept with Danny. But now they never mentioned the subject at all. Ria never said how Danny still had the power to thrill her, just like in the early days. And Rosemary didn't tell of her numerous conquests. Ria knew that she was on the pill and she had a lot of lovers. She'd seen the plans for the large bedroom in Rosemary's apartment, with its luxurious bathroom, jacuzzi and twin hand basins. This wasn't the bathroom of a woman who went to bed too often on her own. Ria longed to ask, but didn't. If Rosemary wanted to tell her, she would.
It's all taking longer than we thought, Rosemary said.
Look at the contract. You'll see there are contingency clauses,
Danny laughed.
You covered your back, didn't you? She was admiring.
No more than you did.
I just insured against shoddy workmanship.
And I just insured against wet weather, which indeed we had, he said.
Rio was cutting out pastry shapes at the kitchen table with the children. Brian just wanted them round. Annie liked to shape hers.
What are they talking about?
Brian asked.
Business, Annie explained. Daddy and Rosemary talking business. Why are they talking in the kitchen? Kitchen's for playing in,
Brian said loudly. He's right, Rosemary said. Let's take all these papers up to the beautiful room upstairs. If I had a room like that, I wouldn't let it grow cold and musty like an old-fashioned parlour. I tell you that for nothing. Good-naturedly, Danny carried the papers upstairs. Rhea stood with her hands floury and her eyes stinging. How dare Rosemary make her feel like that, in front of everybody? A woman who let an upstairs parlour get musty? Tomorrow she'd make sure that that room was never again allowed to lie idle.
Are you okay, Mum?
Annie asked.
Sure I am, of course. Would you like to be in business too?
For no reason, Rhea remembered the fortune-teller Mrs. Connor, prophesying that she would run a successful company or something.
Not really, darling, Rhea said, but thanks all the same for asking.
The next day, Gertie came. She looked very tired and had huge black circles under her eyes.
Don't start on at me, please, Rhea.
I hadn't a notion of it. We all lead our own lives.
Well, that's a change in the way the wind blows, I'm very glad to say.
Gertie, I want us both to tidy the front room, air it, and polish it up properly. Is anyone coming? Gertie asked innocently.
No,
Rhea answered crisply. Gertie paused and looked at her. Sorry, said Rhea.
Okay. You're kind enough not to ask me my business. I won't ask you yours.
They worked in silence, Gertie doing the brass on the fender, Rhea rubbing beeswax into the chairs. Rhea put down her cloth.
It's just I feel so useless, so wet and stupid.
You do? Gertie was amazed.
I do. We have this gorgeous room and we never sit in it.
Gertie looked at her thoughtfully.
Someone had upset Rhea.
But it wasn't her mother.
Nora Johnson's stream of consciousness just washed over her. It was hardly Frances Sullivan, the mother of Annie's friend Kitty. She wouldn't upset anyone. Hilary talked about nothing except the cost of this and the price of that. Rhea wasn't going to get put down by her own sister. It had to be Rosemary.
Gertie opened her mouth and closed it again. Rhea would never hear a word against her friend. There was nothing Gertie could say that would have been helpful.
Well, don't you agree it's idiotic? Rhea asked.
Gertie spoke slowly.
You know, compared to what I have, this whole house is a palace and everyone respects it.
That would be enough for me. But on top of all that, you and Danny went out and found all this beautiful furniture. And maybe you're right. You should use this room more. Why not start tonight?
I'd be afraid the children would pull it to bits.
No, they won't. Make it into a sort of a treat for them to come up here, like a halfway house to bed or something. If they're beautifully behaved here, they can stay up a bit longer. Do you think that might work?
Gertie's eyes were enormous in her dark, haunted face. Rhea wanted to cry.
That's a great idea, she said briskly. Right. Let's finish this in 20 minutes and then we'll go downstairs and have hot currant bread.
Barney's coming round for a drink before dinner this evening. We'll go to my study, Danny said.
Why don't you go to the front room instead? I leave coffee for you there. Gertie and I cleaned it up today. It looks terrific. I tidied away a lot of the rubbish. The table's free for you to put your papers.
Together they went up to examine the room. The 6 o'clock sun was slanting in through the window. There were flowers on the mantelpiece.
It's almost as if you were psychic,
This isn't an easy discussion, so it's good to have it in a nice place.
Nothing wrong?
She was anxious. Not really. Just the perpetual Barney McCarthy cash flow problem. Won't never last long, but it will give you ulcers while it's there.
Is it best if I just keep the kids downstairs out of the way?
That would be terrific, sweetheart.
He looked tired and strained. Barney came at 7 and left at 8. Rhea had the children tidy and ready for bed. When they heard the hall door close, they came up the stairs together, all three of them, the children slightly tentative. This room wasn't part of their territory. They sat and played a game of snakes and ladders. And possibly because they were overawed by the room, Annie and Brian didn't shout at each other. They played it carefully as if it were a very important game. When the children were going to bed, for once without protest, Danny hugged them both very tight.
You make everything worthwhile, all of you, he said in a slightly choked voice.
Rhea said she'd be up to see that they had brushed their teeth. Was it bad?
No, not bad at all. Typical Barney, must have it now, must have everything this minute, overextended himself yet again. He's desperate to make number 32 a real show house, you know. It's going to be his flagship. People will take him seriously with this one. It's just that it's costing a packet.
So?
So he needed a personal guarantee, you know, putting this house up as collateral.
This house?
Yes. His own are all in the frame already.
And what did you say? Rhea was frightened. Barney was a gambler. They could lose everything if he went down.
I told him we owned it jointly, that I'd ask you.
Well, you'd better ring him straight away and say that I said it's fine, she said.
Do you mean that?
Listen, we wouldn't ever have had this place without him. We wouldn't have had anything without him. You should have told me earlier. Ring him on his mobile, so that he'll know we're not debating it. That night, after they had made love, Rhea couldn't sleep. Suppose the cash flow problem was serious this time. Suppose they lost their beautiful home. Danny lay beside her in an untroubled sleep. Several times she looked at his face. And by the time dawn came, she knew that even if they did lose the house, it wouldn't matter, just as long as she didn't lose Danny. Come on, ma'am, we'll have our tea in the front room, Rhea said to her mother.
It's far from a place like this you were reared, Nora Johnson looked around the room, which Rhea had now resolved to use properly.
She still smarted slightly from Rosemary's remark, yet in a way her friend had done her a favour. Danny didn't fall asleep when he sat here. He looked around him with pleasure at all the treasures they'd managed to gather. The children were quieter and kept their games neatly in one of the sideboard drawers, rather than leaving them strewn around the place. Gertie enjoyed cleaning the place. She said it was like stepping into the cover of a magazine. Hilary went through the cost of every item of furniture and pronounced that they had made a killing. Even Rhea's mother seemed happy to sit there, although she'd never admitted. She compared it to rooms in other houses where she dined and said it was much more elegant. She wouldn't allow the dog to come into this territory, and so Pliers slept glumly in a basket in the kitchen. When Rosemary called, she always admired the room. She'd probably forgotten her cruel words, saying it had been kept like a musty parlour no one used. Instead, she saw virtue in its high ceiling, its two tall windows, its lovely warm colours. It was a real gem, she said several times over. It dawned on Rhea that there was great satisfaction in having lovely possessions. If you couldn't have a streamlined figure, flawless makeup and exquisite clothes, then having a perfect room was a substitute. For the first time she knew why people bought books on design and style and decoration and period furniture. It was interesting, however, to see that Rosemary's own design plans were as different from the room she'd admired so much in No. 16 Tara Road as could possibly be. No. 32 had been gutted entirely, and the long top-floor apartment had a wraparound roof garden with a view stretching out towards the Dublin Mountains. At night it would look magnificent with all the city lights in between. The interiors were cool and spare. A lot of empty wall space, pale wooden floors, kitchen fittings that were uncluttered and minimalist. It was about as unlike Rhea's house as anyone could imagine. Rhea tried to like the clean lines seen in the artist's impressions, and as the project proceeded, she visited the site often and forced out words of praise for a place that seemed to her like a modern art gallery. Danny spent a lot of time on number 32. Sometimes Rhea felt too much time. There were other properties out there. This was only one of them.
"I told you, if we get the right kind of tenants in here, Barney's home and dry. He's into the prestige end of things, not the Mickey Mouse conversion. We need a good write-up in the property pages, and Rosemary can organize that. We need a politician, a showbiz person, a sports star or something to buy up the other flats."
"Can you pick and choose?"
"Not really, but we want the word to get about. I asked Cullum to tell the knobs who come into his restaurant."
"And has he?"
"Yes, but sadly his ignoramus brother-in-law, Monto Mackie, is the only one who came inquiring."
"Monto and Caroline want to live in a flat in Tara Road?"
"I didn't think he'd have the cash, but he does. And cash is what he offered, you know, suitcases of it."
"No!" Rhea was astounded. Cullum's beautiful but withdrawn sister was married to an unattractive car dealer, a large, florid man, interested more in going to race meetings than in his wife or his business. He seemed the last kind of person to buy a property like this.
"Barney was delighted, of course, always a man for the suitcase of money. But I convinced him to watch it, that it was quality we wanted here, not dross like Monto Mackie."
"And did he listen? Are things all right with him these days?" Rhea never actually said aloud that she was anxious about the guarantee they had given to Barney, but it was always there.
"Don't worry, sweetheart. The bailiffs aren't at the door. Barney's fine, just has to be steered away from quick money without the small annoyance of tax."
Danny seemed quite amused and quite unimpressed by his boss. They had a very relaxed relationship. When Rosemary spoke in front of Barney about getting some garden furniture, he offered an introduction to a friend.
"No need to trouble the VAT man at all. Pay cash and everyone's happy," Barney had said.
"Not everyone," Rosemary had been cool. "Not the government, not the people who have to pay VAT, not my accountant."
"Oh, pardon me," Barney had said.
But nobody had been embarrassed. You met all sorts in this world. That's what business was about. "Is Lady Ryan having a housewarming party? She might like me to take the coats for her." Nora wanted to know every last detail of it all.
"Don't stir up trouble, Holly."
Danny was affectionate to his mother-in-law.
"You only call her Lady Ryan to get a rise out of Rhea. No, I didn't hear of any party. She didn't say anything to you, did she, sweetheart?"
"She's going to wait until she has a proper roof garden, apparently," Rhea explained. "She says the place'll look nothing until she has lighting and tubs of this and trellises of that. She's such a perfectionist."
"Well, how long will that take her? It took me 3 years to get anything to grow in my place," Nora Johnson said. "Oh, Holly, we're just not in Rosemary Ryan's world. The garden will be ready in 3 weeks. That's part of the schedule."
"It can't be," Nora gasped.
"Yes, it can, if you hire good nurseries and have everything in containers."
"I wonder, could I clean for Rosemary, do you think?" Gertie asked Rhea. "Gertie, you run a business. You haven't time to go out cleaning for people. You don't have to, either."
"I do,"
Gertie was short. "But who's looking after the laundrette?"
"I told you it looks after itself. Your mother's dog Pliers could run it. I have kids in there doing it for me. I make much more per hour cleaning than I pay them."
"That's ludicrous. Has she got anyone already to clean?" "Ask her, Gertie."
"No, Rhea, you ask her for me, will you? As a friend," said Gertie.
"Of course I won't have Gertie cleaning for me. She should be managing that run-down washateria of hers for a start, and minding her own children for another thing. She'd like the hours. You give her the hours, then." "I can't. Danny wonders what on earth I'd do all day that I'd then have to go and pay Gertie."
"Yes, quite.
Oh, Rosemary, go on. You need someone you can trust.
I'll have a firm. Contract cleaners twice a week.
But they're total strangers. They might steal everything, root around amongst your things.
Oh, Rhea, please.
How do you think these places survive? They have to employ honest people. You're absolutely guaranteed that. Otherwise, they go out of business.
And that was it as far as Rosemary was concerned.
She was now much more interested in creating her garden. The trellis arrived and was erected immediately. Days later, the instant climbers in containers were carried upstairs.
Lots of roses, of course, Rosemary explained to Rhea. Bush Rambler, that's a nice pink here on this side, and Muscosa, Madame Pierre Auger, all on this side.
What else do you think? She consulted Rhea, as if she wanted her view.
Well, I see you have golden showers. That's nice.
Rhea picked the only name she recognized.
Yes, but that's yellow. I thought I'd go for blocks of colour, more dramatic to look out at.
Rosemary never once said that it would look well or tasteful or dramatic for other people. It was always for herself.
But surely she'd want other people to admire it too, Rhea thought.
She wasn't sure. She wasn't sure of anything about Rosemary sometimes. Rhea knew for a fact that Rosemary hadn't known one flower from another 3 months ago. And here she was, helping the men from the nurseries to trail the honeysuckle, the jasmine, the wisteria, as if she'd been doing nothing else all her life. It was amazing the grasp she had of anything she touched. She did indeed have a housewarming. Rhea knew hardly anybody there. Danny and Barney knew a few. Polly was in attendance that night, so Rhea had to be sure not to mention the party to Mona. Cullum had hoped that he might tend her to do the catering, but Rosemary had chosen some other firm.
Clients, you know, she said lightly, as if that covered everything.
Gertie had asked her directly did she want any help at all during the function, and Rosemary had answered equally directly that she didn't.
I can't risk having Jack turn up looking for his conjugal rights or his dinner or both, she said.
Rosemary's mother and Eileen and Stephanie were there.
Do you know any of this crowd? Mrs. Ryan asked her daughter Eileen querulously.
No, mother, I only know lawyers these days and protesters, and Rosemary is in business.
But I don't think they come from anything, you know, Mrs. Ryan sighed.
Rosemary was passing behind her mother. She mouthed the phrase at her sister that she knew was hovering on her mother's lips.
Jumped up people.
Eileen and Stephanie burst out laughing. Mrs. Ryan was startled.
Look, you two are eccentric enough already. Don't be drawing attention to yourselves.
Well, at least we didn't wear our boiler suits, Mrs. R, said Stephanie,
who was willowy with long chestnut hair and quite gorgeous.
Or our bowler hats, giggled Eileen.
Mrs. Ryan sighed again. Nobody had her problems. Nobody at all. For all this wealth and style, there wasn't a whisper of a husband for Rosemary anywhere in sight. There were photographers there, however, and Rosemary was photographed with a politician. Barney and Danny were taken with an actress out on the roof garden with a bank of flowers and a panoramic view in the background. Rosemary was on the financial pages, the others on the property pages. Enquiries about number 32 Tara Road came flooding in. Everyone was happy. Because she was now such a near neighbour, Danny and Rhea saw a lot more of Rosemary. She often called in around 7 in the evening for an hour or so, and they'd all have a glass of wine mixed with soda in the front room. Rhea made hot cheese savouries or bacon slices wrapped around almonds and prunes. It didn't matter that Rosemary waved them away. Danny would have a few. She and the children would eat the rest. And anyway, it gave her a chance to bring out the Victorian china that she'd bought at auctions. The children stayed down in the kitchen, with strict warnings not to fight and not to touch anything on the stove. Rhea found herself fixing her hair regularly and putting on some makeup. She really couldn't face the elegant Rosemary night after night without making some effort.
Dressing up for Lady Ryan, her mother scoffed.
You always dress nicely, Mother, I note, Rhea said. Her mother had taken to wearing little pillbox hats, like Audrey Hepburn. She bought these in thrift shops. Danny had commented on them with huge admiration.
Now you dare tell me, Holly, that you don't look like Audrey Hepburn. You could be her younger sister.
Gertie was also disapproving of Rosemary's visits. "You wait on her as if you were her maid, Rhea," she said. "I do nothing of the sort. I don't go out to work like they do, that's all. Anyway, it's nice for me to have a room to show off and everything."
"Sure."
Gertie had gone off Rosemary. It would have been a handy few quid just down the road, and she'd like to have seen the inside of a place that had featured in the newspapers, even as a cleaner.
"Is it lovely above there in number 32?
Gertie asked Rhea. It'd be nice to tell the customers in the laundrette about it, even second hand. Rhea didn't often take Brian up to Rosemary's apartment. He was three now. He upset the calm of this place with his endless noise and perpetual toddling and constant sticky hugs and demands for attention. Annie wouldn't have wanted to come. There was nothing to entertain her at Rosemary's, and too many areas that seemed off limits. "You must bring the children with you," Rosemary would insist. But Rhea knew it was easier not to. She loved them so much that it would kill her to apologize for what she considered their totally natural behavior. So instead she left the children with her mother on one of the many Saturday afternoons that Danny was working and walked up to see Rosemary on her own. It was so peaceful and elegant, as if she hadn't unmade a bed, cooked a meal, or done any washing since the day it had been shown off at the housewarming. Even the roof garden looked as if every flower had been painted into place. Despite the smart surroundings, Rosemary was in so many ways exactly the same as she'd been years ago when they'd started work at the estate agency. She could still laugh in the same infectious way about the things that had made them laugh back then. Hillary's obsession with money, Mrs. Ryan's fear of jumped-up people, Nora Johnson's living her life through the world of movies. Rosemary had told Rhea about some of the problems at work. The girl who was excellent at everything and would have been a superb personal assistant, but had such a bad body odour she had to let her go. The man who had changed his mind at the last moment and cancelled a huge print job, and Rosemary had to take him to court. Charity leaflets she'd printed for nothing, for a function which turned out to be a rave where everyone was on ecstasy and the police were called. They would sit on the terrace with their feet up and the heavy scent of the flowers all around them. "What's that lovely green one with a gorgeous smell?" Rhea asked. "Tobacco plant," Rosemary said. "And the big purple one, a bit like lilac. Solanum crispum. How on earth do you know them all and remember them, Rosemary? You have so many other things in your mind as well." "It's all in a book, Rhea. There's no point in having these things if you don't know what they are." Rosemary's voice was slightly impatient. Rhea knew how to head impatience off at the pass. "You're absolutely right. I've got plenty of books. Next time I'll talk just as authoritatively as you do." "That's my girl," Rosemary was approving. The moment of irritation was over. Maybe if their place was less untamed and wild, she and Danny could sit like this on a Saturday afternoon and watch the children play. Maybe they could just talk to each other, read the papers together sometimes. It had been so long since they sat in their garden. "Is there a lot of work keeping all this the way it is?" "No, I have a man once a week for 4 hours, that's all." "And how do you know what to tell him to do?"
"I don't. I hired him from a garden centre. He knows what to do.
But you see, the whole trick was in making it labour-saving. It was the builders who did it all. Once you don't have sprawling herbaceous borders that'd break your back weeding them, you're fine. Just nice, easy-care bushes and shrubs which sort of bring themselves up." It always seemed so effortless when Rosemary described things. As she walked down Tara Road, Rhea thought about it. Brian was old enough now. She could get a job. But Danny didn't seem to want her to.
"Sweetheart, isn't it wonderful for me to know you're here and in charge of everything," he'd say, if she brought the subject up. Or else he'd frown with worry and concern. "Aren't you happy, love? Oh, that's terrible. I suppose I'm very selfish. I thought your life seemed very full, lots of friends and everything, but of course we'll talk about it."
That wasn't what she wanted either. It was a particularly lovely road just as the summer was starting. The cherry trees were in bloom everywhere, their petals starting to make a pink carpet. She never stopped marvelling at the variety of life you could find in Tara Road. houses where students lived in great numbers in small flats and bedsitters, their bicycles up against the railings, just as they had been outside their own house until this year, when Danny and Rhea had been able to reclaim all the rented rooms for themselves. If she turned right outside Rosemary's house, the road would go past equally mixed housing, high houses like their own, lower ones half hidden by trees, then on past the small lock-up workshop where the road changed again into big houses in their own grounds, until it came to the corner with a busy street, and round the corner to where Gertie lived and worked, where the handy laundrette had plenty of clientele among the bedsitter land around, and Gertie and Jack lived their mysterious life, where you were considered a much better friend if you asked no questions at all. Her mind full of gardens, Rhea noticed that almost every house had made more effort than they had. But it was so hard to know where to start. Some of the undergrowth really needed someone with a saw to cut it down, and then what? She didn't want to be one of those women who, leaving a friend's house, immediately wanted new kitchen work surfaces or a change of curtains. But it seemed ludicrous that she and Danny had managed to close their eyes somehow to a huge aspect of the life they could have together. Rhea didn't want to admit it to herself, but she knew that she had got out of the habit of initiating things. When they were first married, she'd go down to the main road, buy two pots of paint, and the scullery would be immaculate when Danny got home from work. Now, perhaps, he had higher standards. He bought and sold and therefore got to know the houses of the rich and those with taste and style. She'd never go ahead on her own with any plan. Yet, if Danny didn't see that their garden was dragging the place down, perhaps it was up to her to make the move. Barney McCarthy was just parking his car in their cluttered driveway. It wasn't an easy manoeuvre. He had to negotiate it in beside their car, Annie's bicycle, Brian's tricycle, a wheelbarrow that had been there for weeks, several crates that had been ignored by the dustmen but had never been taken to the dump. "You look lovely, Rhea," he said as he got out. He was a man who admired women, but never paid an idle compliment. If he said you looked well, he meant it. Rhea patted her hair, pleased. "Thank you, Barney. I don't feel lovely. Actually, I feel a bit annoyed with myself. I think I'm getting rather slovenly."
"You?"
He was amazed. "When you think that we've lived here for nearly 9 years, and it's still a bit like a building site?"
"Oh, no, no,"
Barney murmured soothingly. "But it is, Barney, and I'm the one who's around here all the time. I should be doing something about it, and I'm going to. I've decided that. Poor Danny shouldn't have to take that on as well as everything else. Already he works all the hours God sends." She thought Barney looked at her sympathetically.
"Rhea, you can't go talking like that. There's years of undergrowth there."
"Don't I know it? No, I meant, maybe you could tell me how much it would cost to get your men to come in and clear the place. Then we could arrange what to plant. Just tell me what it'll be. Don't bother Danny at all. And I'll build it into the household expenses. At least that's something I'll be able to do."
"I think we should bring Danny in on this. Ask him what he wants."
"But he'll say in time, and we'll never get it done. Let's just clear it, Barney, and then we can decide what we should plant and how to decorate it." Barney stood, stroking his chin.
"I don't know, Rhea. There's an awful lot to be thought of before you bring in the diggers. Suppose you wanted to build here, for example, it would be silly to have put in a lot of fancy flower beds and such like, which would only have to be taken out again."
"Build?" Rhea was astonished. "But what would we want to build? Haven't we a huge 3.5-story house already? We haven't any furniture in some of the tenants' rooms yet. We're going to make a bigger study for Danny and maybe a sort of playroom for the children, but we don't need any more space."
"You never know how people's plans change as the years go on," Barney said.
She felt a chill. She didn't want things to change, only get better. She took a sudden decision. She wasn't going to discuss it any more with this man. Much as he liked and admired her, he thought of her only as Danny's little wife, pretty, possibly a good mother and homemaker, tactful and always ready with the right kind of food when they needed it, equally pleasant to his wife and his mistress. He didn't consider her a person who would be able to make a decision about the home she lived in. "You are absolutely right, Barney. I don't know what got into me," she said.
Will I make a little snack for you and Danny? Iced tea, maybe, and a tomato sandwich on wholemeal bread.
You're a genius, he said.
Rhea's mother was in the kitchen with the children.
Oh, there you are, back from Lady Ryan's place.
Nora Johnson had never liked Rosemary. Rhea had now forgotten where the resentment began and why. She'd long since ceased to try and convince her mother of Rosemary's worth.
Yes, indeed, and she was asking for you too, Mum.
Snorted Nora Johnson.
Was that Barney I heard you talking to?
Rhea was bending over to see the picture that Annie had been painting. There was water all over the kitchen.
I painted a picture of you, Mum, she said proudly.
A creature like a gollywog stood surrounded by saucepans and frying pans.
Lovely, Rhea said. That's really beautiful, Annie. You're so clever.
I'm a clever boy, Brian insisted.
No, you're a very stupid boy, Annie said.
Annie, really, Brian's very clever too.
I don't think he has a brain in his head, Annie said seriously.
If you don't give him any paints, he screams, and if you do, he just makes big splashes.
Rubbish, Annie. He's just not as old as you are, that's all. Wait until he's your age. He'll be able to do all the same things.
When you get older, will you be as clever as Gran? Annie asked.
Well, I hope so, Rhea smiled. Never in a million years, her mother said. I expect you'll be whipping up some little delicacy for that adulterer upstairs.
It's a word I don't use, really, in general conversation myself, Rhea said, flashing her a look. Annie was learning new phrases all the time.
What's a dutterer? She asked.
Oh, a dutterer is like a sort of drain, you know, another word for a gutter, Rhea said quickly.
Annie accepted this and went back to her painting.
Sorry, her mother said a little later.
Rhea patted her on the arm. It doesn't matter. I agree with you as it happens. But then I would, wouldn't I? Wives always do. Can you get me those big iced tea glasses, please, ma'am?
Mad idea, this. You should either have a nice cold gin and tonic or a nice hot cup of tea, I say. Not mixing the two up. It's not natural.
Later that evening, Rhea said to Danny that they should really try to do something with the wilderness of the garden.
Not now, sweetheart, Danny said, as she knew he was going to.
I'm not going to nag. Let me do it. I'll ask Barney for a prize.
You already did, Danny said.
That's because I was trying to take things off your shoulders.
Sweetheart, don't do that, please. He'd only do it for nothing, and that's not necessary.
But, Danny, you're the one who says we must keep up the value of the property.
We don't know what we're going to do with it yet, Rhea.
Do with it? We want a place for people to park their cars when they come to see us. For us to park our car without it being like an obstacle race. We want it to look like a home where people are settling down for their life, not some kind of a transit camp.
But we haven't thought it through, what the future may bring.
Now don't start talking like Barney about building here, Rhea was very cross.
Barney said that?
Yes, and I don't know what the hell he was talking about. Danny saw her red, angry face and her confusion.
Listen, if there's any building to be done, it's way down the road yet. You're right, we must do something, a sort of patch-up job on it.
But what do we need to build?
Nothing yet, you're quite right.
Yet? Haven't we got a huge house?
Who knows what the future will bring?
That's not fair, Danny. I must know what you think the future will bring.
Okay, then. I'll tell you what I mean. Suppose, now just suppose we fell on hard times. We wouldn't want to lose this house. If we had a chance to build in the garden, maybe a small unit, two self-contained flats, little maisonettes they used to be called, or townhouses, there'd be room.
Two flats in our garden, outside our front door? Rhea looked at him as if he were mad.
If we left the possibility of doing so, then it would be like an insurance policy.
But it'd be terrible.
Better than losing the house if that were the choice. It's not, but suppose it were.
But why should I suppose any such thing? You're always looking on the bright side, so why are we looking at doom and gloom and building horrible flats in our garden in case we're poor? If there's something you're not telling me, then you'd better tell me now.
It's not fair to leave me not bothering my pretty little head. It's not fair, and I won't stand for it.
Danny took her in his arms. I swear I'm not hiding things from you. It's just in this business you see so many people who believed that the future was going to be fine and that everything would go on slightly upwards every year, and then something happens, some swing in the market, and they lose everything.
But we don't have any stocks and shares, Danny.
I know, sweetheart, we don't.
Well, what does that mean?
Barney does, did, and our fortunes are very much tied up with his.
But you said that the whole business of the guarantee was over, that once he'd made his money on number 32, he'd got out of that worry.
And he has, Danny was soothing. So he's more cautious now.
Barney was never cautious in his life. He had a heart attack, and he still smokes and drinks brandy. And anyway, why does it mean that we should be cautious and edgy?
Because our fortunes are tied in with his. Barney knows that, and he wants the best for us. So that's why he likes to think there's a chance of our building, supposing things go badly for him, of us getting more bricks and mortar, the only thing that's definitely going to keep its value, do you see?
Not really, to be honest, Rhea said. If Barney's business collapsed, couldn't you work in any estate agency in town?
Yes, I suppose I could,
Danny said, with that quick, bright smile that Rhea had learned to dread. It was the kind of smile he had when he was showing somebody a doubtful property, when he was anxious to close on something, when he had a completion date but not an exchange date, when he was afraid that the chain wouldn't hold and somebody somewhere along the line wouldn't get their loan, and it had all collapsed like a house of cards. But there was no more to be discovered or discussed or gained. A patch-up job and a legacy of worry for the future, that was what had come out of the conversation. Sheila Main wrote from America to say that the papers were full of the great opportunities in Ireland and the numbers of people who were relocating there. She wondered if any of the girls she knew in Dublin would advise her. She'd so much enjoyed meeting them all when she'd been there, and hadn't that been a fun day when they'd gone to the psychic in her caravan? Mrs. Connor had told Sheila that her future was in her own hands, and really and truly this was very sound. Everywhere she looked now she read the same advice, the same counsel. Why hadn't they known it years ago, when they were just swept along with what everyone else thought and did what other people did? Sheila wrote that her son Sean, who was Annie's age, was learning Irish dancing at a nearby class, and her daughter Kelly, who was a very demanding 3-year-old, would join the baby's class in it next year. She was determined that the children wouldn't grow up ignorant of their Irish heritage. She copied the letter to her sister Gertie, to Rosemary, to Rhea, and to Hilary. Sheila had particularly liked Hilary during her visit to Ireland, and she urged her to come out to visit her in the school holidays. How could I do that? She must be mad. They've no idea of money over there. Hilary showed the invitation. I don't know, Hilary. Rhea sometimes felt that she spent her life assuring her sister that some things actually were within her reach. Suppose you were to book 3 months in advance. You'd get a great reduction. And Sheila says it'd cost you nothing out there. But what about Martin? Hilary always had an argument against everything that was suggested. Well, he could go with you, if he'd like 2 weeks out in Connecticut, which he very well might, or else he could go home and see his parents in the country. You know he says he wants to go back there more than you do. Hilary frowned. It made sense only if you were as rich as Rhea and Danny, with no financial worries at all. Life was very strange the way the cards were dealt, she said again. Rhea's patience was limited that day. Mona McCarthy had been around, wondering would Rhea help at a coffee morning, which was fine, except that it meant she would have to ask someone to look after Brian for her. She couldn't ask her mother. Nora Johnson had such a network of social and professional activities that you had to book her days in advance. Today she would be ironing in one place, delivering leaflets about the bring-and-buy sale in aid of the animal refuge, visiting some of the old ladies in St. Rita's. She couldn't break into all that. Gertie said it wasn't a good morning to leave Brian at the laundrette for a couple of hours because, well, let's say it wasn't a good morning. Gertie's own children were with her mother. That said it all. And never in a million years would Rhea ask a neighbour like Francis Sullivan to look after him. It would be admitting that even as a non-working wife she couldn't organize her life. If only that pale, wan Caroline, the strange sister of Cullum in the restaurant, was more together, then she could be drafted in for a couple of hours. But it always took her about 3 seconds too long to understand what you were saying, and Rhea hadn't the time for it today. Hilary sat there turning the letter this way and that. Rhea decided to take the chance. "I'm going to ask you a favour. Now say no if you want to. I'm very anxious to go up to Mona McCarthy's house for a variety of reasons."
"Oh, I'm sure you are," Hilary sniffed.
"None of them like you think, but it would suit me greatly if you minded Brian for me for 3 hours, and then I'll come back and make you a huge, gorgeous lunch. Yes or no?" "Why do you want to go there?" "Oh, that's a no, I suppose," Rhea said. "Not necessarily. If you tell me why you want to go, then I'll stay."
"All right, I will."
"I'm worried that the McCarthys might be in some kind of financial trouble. I want to see what I can find out, because if they are, then it'll affect Danny. Now that's the truth. Take it or leave it. Yes or no?"
"Yes," said Hilary with a smile.
Rhea phoned a taxi, put on her good suit, her best silk scarf, took a freshly baked walnut cake from the wire tray where it was cooling, and headed off to the McCarthys' large house 6 miles from Dublin. The drive was filled with smart cars and the sound of women's chatter was loud as she approached the door. It was touching to see Mona's face light up when she came in. Rhea slipped out of her jacket and began to help, with the practiced smile of one who'd been to many coffee mornings. It was all about making sure these comfortably off and often fairly lonely women had a good time and were warmly welcomed into a group. Their £10 entrance fee wasn't in itself so important as making them feel they belonged. This way they could later be persuaded to part with much larger sums of money at fashion shows, at glittering dinner dances, at film premieres. An elegant woman was introduced to Rhea as Margaret Murray.
"Oh, you may know my husband, Ken. He's in the property business," she said.
Rhea longed to tell her that Ken Murray was the first boy she'd ever kissed many years ago when she was 15 and a half, that it had been horrible and that he'd told her she was boring. But she thought that Margaret Murray mightn't find this as funny in retrospect as she did, so she said nothing but had a little giggle to herself.
"You're in good form," Mona McCarthy said approvingly.
"Remind me to tell you why later. This is all going very well, isn't it?"
"Yes, I think they like coming here as a curiosity," Mona said.
"Why so?"
"Well, they speculate a lot, you know, about whether we're still solvent or not. Rumours around the place have us in the workhouse."
Mona looked remarkably calm as she refilled the coffee pot from the two percolators. "And aren't you worried about this?" Rhea asked.
"No, Rhea. If I worried every time that I hear something about Barney, I'd be a very worried woman indeed. We've been poor before, and if it happens, I imagine we could cope with it again. But I don't think it will happen. Barney's always a contingency plan person. I feel sure there are a lot of safety nets along the way."
She was serene, almost like a ship, as she sailed back into the room full of women whom she knew to be rather over-interested in what kept this extravagant lifestyle afloat. Cullum Barry called when Rhea and Hilary were having the promised enormous lunch.
"Well, you two don't stint yourselves, I'm glad to see."
He seemed happy to accept their invitation to join them.
"Oh, Rhea can afford to buy the best cuts of meat," Hilary said, reverting to type. "It's what she does with them that's so delicious."
Cullum appreciated the cooking.
"And the way they're served."
"It's very hard to get good fresh vegetables round here," Rhea said. "They're very tired up at the corner, and nowhere else is in a pram's walk, really."
"Why don't you grow your own?" Cullum suggested.
"Oh, Lord, no. It'd be such hard work digging it all out back there. Even to get the front tidied up was a major undertaking. Neither Danny nor I have the souls of gardeners, I'm afraid."
"I'd do it for you at the back if you like,"
Cullum offered. "Oh, you can't do that," Rhea protested.
"I have an ulterior motive.
Suppose I was to make a proper kitchen garden out there and grow all the things I want for the restaurant in it, then you could have some too.
Would it work?
Yes, of course it would. That is, if you don't have plans to have velvet lawns, water features, fountains or pergolas out there.
No, I think we can safely say those aren't on the agenda.
Great, then we'll do it.
Rhea noted with pleasure that Cullum hadn't said they should wait to consult Danny. Unlike Barney McCarthy, he seemed to regard her as a responsible adult, capable of making a decision on her own. Will it be very heavy work, preparing the soil?
I don't know yet.
It's such a wilderness out there. We've no real idea how much awful stuff there might be buried with old roots and rubble.
But I need the exercise anyway, so it's going to be something that benefits everyone. We all win. No one loses.
Very few of those deals about, let me tell you, Hilary said. And from that time on, Cullum became part of the background in their house in Tara Road. He let himself in silently through the wooden door that opened onto the back lane. He kept his gardening tools in the small makeshift hut at the back. He dug an area half the width of the house and the whole length of the garden. This left plenty of space for the children to play in. And as the months went by, he erected a fence and covered it with a plant he called Mile a Minute or Russian Vine.
It really looks rather nice, you know, Danny said thoughtfully one day. And the whole notion of a mature kitchen garden at rear is a good selling point.
If we were to sell, which we're not going to do. I wish you wouldn't frighten me saying things like that, Danny, Rhea complained.
Listen, sweetheart, if you worked in a world where hardly anything else is discussed, then you'd talk in auctioneer speak too.
He was right, and what's more, he was good-tempered and happy. He was very loving to Rhea sometimes, dashing home from work saying he thought of her so much and deeply that he couldn't concentrate on anything else. They'd go upstairs and draw the curtains. Once or twice, Rhea wondered what Cullum working in the garden might think. They didn't talk much about it, but she knew that in Gertie's case it was a nightmare, usually only attempted by Jack when drunk. For Hilary, it had almost ceased to exist. Martin had once said the only real reason for a man and woman to mate was the hope of producing a child, and that the urge and impetus just weren't there otherwise. He'd only said it once, and afterwards confessed that he'd been a bit depressed at the time and didn't really mean it. But somehow it was always there in the air, Hilary confided. Rhea didn't know any details of Rosemary's sex life, but she was sure it must be very active in those perfect surroundings that she'd created for herself. Everywhere she went, men were attracted by her. Rhea had sometimes seen Rosemary leave parties with men. Did she take them home, upstairs, to that apartment which had featured in so many magazines? Probably. Rosemary wouldn't live like a nun. Still, it must be very unsettling to have to get to know different people in that way, to learn the intricacies and familiarities of another body instead of knowing exactly what worked for you. And for Danny. Rhea knew she was very, very lucky. The anxiety over the McCarthy finances seemed to have subsided. Danny didn't work so late at night. He took his little princess Annie out on walks and visits to the sea. He held the hand of his chubby son Brian as the child changed from stumbling to waddling and eventually to running away ahead of them. The back garden changed slowly and laboriously. Rhea knew that it was much easier to learn the names of 20 plants for containers on a roof terrace than to understand Cullum's discussion about double cropping and pest-proof barriers. She tried to sympathize when all his sprouts failed, when his great bamboo bean supports blew down in the wind, and when the peas that he'd tried to grow in hanging baskets produced hardly anything at all. Why didn't you grow them in the ground? Rhea had asked innocently.
I was trying to make it look nice for you to look out on. You know, a lot of hanging baskets on the back wall. They looked good, I thought.
He was very disappointed. She wished she could share his enthusiasm, but to her it was back-breaking and unyielding, and there were mountains of healthy sprouts and peas in the shops. Still, he battled on, and he even gave the children little tubs where they could grow tomatoes and peppers. He was good with Annie and Brian, and seemed to understand the age difference between them well. Brian got a simple tomato plant, which just had to be watered.
Annie was encouraged to grow lettuce and basil. But mainly he didn't take part in their lives. He kept to himself on his side of the huge Russian vine fence. On the other side there was a swing, a garden seat, and even a homemade barbecue pit. At the front of the house, the area had been tarmacadamed by Barney's men, and what had been described as a patch-up job had blossomed well. People admired the coloured heathers that grew in the makeshift flowerbed. "I don't know where the heathers came from, honestly," Rhea said once.
"Well, you must have planted them, sweetheart. Little and all as I know about gardening, I know flowers don't appear by magic. And anyway, don't you have to have special soil for heathers?"
Colum was there as they spoke.
That's me, I'm afraid. I bought a bag of the wrong kind of soil, you know, ericaceous."
They didn't know, but they nodded sagely.
"So I had to put it somewhere, and I dumped it there. Hope it's all right."
"It's great," Danny approved. "And did you plant the heathers, too?"
"Someone gave me a present of them. You see, because I put in the menu that all vegetables are homegrown, the customers think I have a great deal of land behind my place. They often give me plants instead of a tip."
"But we should pay you for those," Rhea began.
"Nonsense, Rhea. As I told you both, I have a very good deal being able to use your garden, and honestly, the vegetables are a huge success. I have rows of courgettes planted this week, and the trick is to come up with some clever recipes for them now."
"You're doing better these days?"
Danny was interested.
"Much better, and we got a great review. That helped a lot."
Colum never complained, even when times were slack.
"I was wondering if you'd consider a small greenhouse as an eyesore. I'd disguise it well, you know, build it up against the back wall."
"Go ahead, Colum. Do you want a contribution?"
"Only the right to use a bit of electricity for it. It won't take much."
"Oh, would that all business deals could be like this," Danny said, shaking Colum's hand.
Brian was 7 in the summer of 1995. Danny and Rhea had a barbecue for his friends. "They only wanted sausages," Brian said. "People didn't eat other things."
"Not lovely lamb chops," Danny said.
He liked the idea of standing with an apron and a chef's hat, turning something a little more ambitious than sausages.
"Ugh,"
Brian said.
"Are those lovely green peppers Colum grew? We could thread them all on a skewer and make kebabs."
"My friends don't like kebabs," Brian said.
"Your friends have never had kebabs," Annie said.
She was close to being 12, only 3 months away from it. It was really very hard having to deal with someone as infantile as Brian. Very strangely, it seemed that her mother and father appeared as delighted with his babyish ramblings as they were with anything she said. The arrangements for his party were very tedious. Annie had suggested giving Brian 2 pounds of cooked sausages and letting all his friends heat them up. They'd never know the difference, and all they cared about was lots of tomato ketchup.
"No, it must be right. We had a great party for your 7th birthday, don't you remember?" her mother said.
Annie didn't remember. All the birthdays had merged into one, but she knew that they must have made a fuss over it, like over all celebrations.
"That's right, it was terrific," she said grudgingly.
"You are beautiful, Annie Lynch. You're an adorable girl."
Her mother hugged her until it hurt.
"I'm awful. Look at my desperate straight hair."
"And I spend my life saying, look at my frizzy hair," Rhea said. "It's a very annoying part of being a woman. We're never really satisfied with the way we look."
"Some people are."
"Oh, all the film stars your gran goes on about. All those beauties. I expect they're happy with themselves, but nobody we know."
"I'd say that Rosemary is okay with the way she looks."
Rosemary Ryan had refused to be called Auntie by her friends' children. She said she was quite old enough already without any of that sort of thing, thank you. "She's super looking, I know, but she's always on this diet or that diet, so maybe in her heart she isn't totally satisfied either."
"No, she's very pleased with the way she looks. You can see it in the way she looks at herself in the mirrors."
"What?"
"She sort of smiles at herself, ma'am. You must see it. It's not only in mirrors, in pictures, anywhere where there's glass."
Rhea laughed.
"Aren't you a funny little article, Annie, the things you see?"
Annie didn't like being patted on the head.
It's true, isn't it, Dad?
Totally true, Princess, said Danny.
You didn't hear what was said, they both accused him.
Yes, I did. Annie said that Rosemary smiles at her reflection in mirrors, and indeed she does, always has. Years ago in the old agency she was at it.
Annie looked pleased. Rhea felt put out. It was such a criticism of her friend, and she'd never been aware of it.
Well, she's so good-looking, she's entitled to admire herself, she said eventually.
Good-looking? I think she's like a bird of prey, Annie said.
A handsome bird of prey, though, Danny corrected her.
Mam looks much better, Annie said.
Oh, that goes without saying, Danny said, kissing each of them on the tops of their heads.
It was a very sunny day on Brian's birthday. The preparations went on all morning. Nora Johnson was there fussing. Gertie had come to ask if she could help. She looked as though she hadn't slept for a month. Only if you stay for the party properly, if you go home and get the children, Rhea said. No, not today. She was so strained it almost hurt to look at her. What's wrong, Gertie?
Nothing.
The word was like a scream. Where are the children?
With my mother.
Who's running the laundrette?
A 16-year-old schoolgirl who wants a holiday job. Have you finished the interrogation, Rhea? Can I get on with helping you?
Oh, hey, that's not fair. It's not an interrogation. Rhea looked upset.
No, sorry.
It's just you don't look too well. Why do you want to help here?
Why do you think?
Gertie, I don't know. Truly, I don't.
Then you're as thick as two short planks, Rhea. I need the money.
Rhea's face paled. You're my friend, for God's sake. If you want some money, ask me. Don't come round expecting me to be inspired. How much do you want? She reached for her handbag. I won't take money from you, Rhea. Am I going mad? Didn't you just ask for it?
Yeah, but I won't take it as charity.
Well, all right. Pay it back to me sometime.
I won't be able to do that.
So it doesn't matter then.
It does. I want to earn it. I want to scrub and clean. I'll start with the oven. Then I'll do all the kitchen surfaces and the bathrooms. I need the tenner.
Rhea sat down with the shock of it all. You must have 10 pounds. You must have that much, Gertie. You run a business, for God's sake.
I have to keep the float in the shop. He knows that. I told him I'd be back with 10 pounds before lunch. He won't go near the shop.
Jesus Christ, Gertie, take the 10 pounds. Do you think I'm going to watch you for 2 hours earning this?
I won't take it.
Well, get out then.
What?
You heard me. You're my friend. I'm not going to pay you £5 an hour for sloshing about in my kitchen and putting a brush down my lavatories today. I'm sorry, but that's it. Rhea's eyes were blazing. Gertie had tears in her eyes.
Oh, Rhea, don't be full of principle. Have a little understanding instead.
I have plenty of understanding. Why don't you have a little dignity?
I'm trying to. You're taking it away from me.
Gertie looked as if a puff of wind would blow her over.
You're very upset.
Of course I am upset. Now, will you please take the £10 note, and if you try to give it back to me, or lift one hand towards any cleaning whatsoever, I'll ram the bloody money down your throat.
Well, you have no reason to be upset with me or with anyone, Rhea. You have a charmed life. Now, I don't envy you it. You deserve it, and you work hard for it, and you're nice to everybody. But everything's going right for you. You might just think about how hard it might be when everything's going wrong.
Rhea swallowed. It's my son's 7th birthday. The sun is shining. Of course I'm happy. I'm not happy every day. Nobody is. Listen, you are my friend. You and I know everything about each other.
We don't know everything about each other, Gertie said quietly. We're not schoolgirls anymore. We are women in our mid-30s, grown-ups. I thought that if I did the work, somehow we'd be quits. I'm sorry. And I'm also sorry for upsetting you on Brian's birthday. She turned to leave.
If you don't take the £10, you'll really have upset me.
Sure. Thank you, Rhea.
No, not coldly. With a bit of a hug, anyway. There was a stiff little hug. Gertie's thin body was like a board. You know what'd be the best?
If you were to come back later with the kids, would you do that?
No, thank you. But not because of sulking or anything. Just no.
Sure, right.
Thanks again, Rhea.
You're full of dignity. You always have been.
You deserve all you have and even more. Enjoy the day. She was gone.
Nora Johnson came into the kitchen from the garden.
I've been tying the balloons to the front gate so that they'll know where the party is. And I see Lady Ryan coming down the road wearing a designer outfit. Coming to help, no doubt. And where's Gertie got to? She said she was going to clean some of those old baking tins for the sausages.
She had to go home, ma'am.
Well, honestly, talk about helpful friends when you need them. If you hadn't Hillary and myself, you'd be lost.
Haven't I always said it, ma'am?
And will Annie help to entertain them when they get here?
No, I don't think a dozen seven-year-old boys is Annie's idea of a good summer afternoon. She'll keep her distance. Danny has a whole lot of games planned for them.
He's not off about his master's business then, is he? Nora sniffed.
No, ma'am, he's not.
You look a bit pale. Are you all right?
Never better.
Rhea escaped in relief to greet Rosemary, who'd come to count the numbers. She'd bought a great amount of individually wrapped chocolate ice creams, which were at home in her freezer.
I'll come back in an hour, so you don't have to bother putting them into the freezer. Was there a problem with Gertie?
Why do you ask? Rhea wanted to know.
She ran past me on the road crying. She didn't see me. She genuinely didn't.
Oh, nothing more than the usual problem she has. Rhea looked grim.
Roll on the divorce referendum, Rosemary said.
You don't think that's going to make the slightest difference in Gertie's way of thinking, do you? Rhea asked.
I mean, if there was divorce introduced into this country tomorrow morning, you don't think she'd leave Jack, abandon him, give up on him like everyone else has? Of course she wouldn't.
Well, what's the point of having it on the statute books at all if people are going to react like that? Rosemary wondered.
Search me. Rhea was at a loss. The two families we know who should avail themselves of it won't go near it.
You don't think Barney McCarthy is going to disturb his nice, comfortable little situation if divorce is introduced, do you?
No, I don't indeed.
But I didn't know you'd see things so clearly.
Rosemary laughed almost admiringly. Sometimes Rhea could be very surprising, and went back to number 32 to change into something more suitable for a children's party.